Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We'll find out about the upcoming cabaret concert. We'll get a preview of this week's Summer Poetry Showcase. We'll talk with the new owners of Rainy Retreat Books. Alicia Scanvis and Kirsis Scanvis will be here to highlight this weekend's Club Baby Seal comedy show, and Maggie Swanson will be here to talk about the Douglas 4th of July activities, that writer's almanac, bird note, music, and more. That's today. Next, looking at our weather, scattered showers for today and tonight. Thursday, mostly cloudy. Friday, mostly sunny. And Saturday, partly sunny.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A South Dakota judge has upheld the continuation of a permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. Sixth Circuit Judge John Brown has ruled that the State Public Utilities Commission acted appropriately. Brown heard arguments in March from pipeline opponents and proponents. The PUC held an administrative hearing in the summer of 2015 and afterward accepted TransCanada's assertions that the pipeline can still comply with conditions set in its 2009 permit. Opponents say the pipeline threatens water, roads, and climate. Victoria Wicks has this report.
To build the pipeline, TransCanada needed permission from the federal State Department to cross the U.S.-Canada border. The Obama administration had denied that permit, but during this appeals process, the Trump administration approved it. At the Sixth Circuit hearing in March, attorney Peter Capicella argued that the PUC should have required TransCanada to apply for a new permit.
That's what should happen here. That makes sense. The existing permit is 7 years old. The environmental data that was assessed by the agency in granting that permit is 10 years old or more.
Appellants asked Judge Brown to apply a standard of public trust while reviewing the case. Robin Martinez represents Dakota Rural Action. He said the PUC has an obligation to protect the resources of the people of South Dakota, including its land and water.
The PUC cannot be in a position of simply taking a look at a one-page piece of paper from a pipeline company that says, yeah, we promise to comply. The PUC has a fiduciary duty to protect the public resources of the state, protect its water.
Judge Brown rejected those arguments. He says there is no precedent for applying the public trust doctrine to an administrative hearing. Brown says plaintiff's objections should have been raised as appeals after the PUC granted the permit in 2009. He notes no challenges were filed between granting that permit and PUC certification hearing in 2015. Plaintiffs also include Cheyenne River and Yankton Sioux tribes and the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy. Plaintiffs' attorneys are reviewing the decision and have not yet decided whether to appeal it. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The fight against Indian mascots is not over, says an opponent of the Washington football team's name after the U.S. Supreme Court Monday ruled in a case involving a rock band named the Slants, deciding in the band's favor to use the name, finding federal trademarks can be registered even if they're offensive or derogatory. Many people involved in the mascot change the name movement closely watched the rock band case. Amanda Blackhorse and other Native Americans petitioned to get the NFL team's trademarks canceled on the grounds the R word is disparaging to Native Americans, which happened in 2014. Blackhorse says while Monday's court decision is disappointing, she adds, now's not the time to sit back and rest on the mascot issue.
I'm all for free speech. I think we should be able to speak our mind, and the government should have very sort of little authority when it comes to how people should refer to themselves. But also, I think the government has the responsibility to protect vulnerable people, vulnerable and oppressed people. And I think that's what the Lanham Act did for us. It protected us as Indigenous people from being dehumanized, from being referred to in hate speech. Now that that act is no longer valid, anyone can register anything that is disparaging now.
The National Congress of American Indians and other groups say studies show the R word impacts the self-image and mental health of Native Americans, especially children. The team's owner, Dan Snyder, has refused to change the name and reacted to Monday's court decision, saying he was thrilled. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The third National Gathering of American Indian Veterans celebrating all U.S. military takes place July 21st through the 23rd in Wheaton, Illinois. Information by calling Trickster Art Gallery at 847-301-2090. Proud to support this program.
And by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Glad to have you with us. My name is Lori Scandling. I'm today's volunteer host, and with me, of course, is our producer, Jeff Brown. Thank you, Jeff, for helping us get this show on the air. My first guests today are Lexi Painter and Tori Weaver. They are the new owners of Rainy Retreat Books up there on Seward Street. So thank you for joining me today. Glad to have you, and congratulations on the purchase.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Seems like it might be a bit risky in today's world of electronic reading. Tori, talk about the decision to purchase a used bookstore in today's world.
Well, contrary to what most people think, used bookstores and bookstores in general are actually on the upswing right now, as e-book sales have kind of started falling for the first time since their introduction. So they had a really steep growth period, and then they plateaued a few years ago, and now they're finally on the decline.
And Tori, what, if any, is your background in books or small business management?
So I worked at Strand, the second largest used independent bookstore in the United States.
Where is that?
In Union Square, New York City.
Is that after Powell Books? I don't know if
Powell's
the largest or not in Portland,
yep.
Which is blocks and blocks and blocks of books.
It's amazing. I've been there, too.
So did that ignite your interest, or had you always been a bibliophile?
Well, I have a degree in English, and I never wanted to teach. So I went to work at Strand immediately after college because I didn't have a better plan. And then for the last few years, I've been working as the manager for Hearthside Books here, and I'm ready to try it on my own.
The Rainy Retreat Books has been for sale for a couple of years. When did you begin to think about this? And Alexi, you're going to be the numbers person in this deal. How did that conversation evolve? And talk about the kinds of considerations that went into a big decision.
I think we first started talking about it last year, actually, and then sort of didn't talk about it for a while again, and then brought it up again in the last couple of months. I think for us, as Tori said, independent bookstores are kind of on the rise again, and Juno has a long history of supporting its local businesses and supporting buying local whenever possible. And one thing that we really like about this business is actually we do have a great product, that used books are the same price or cheaper than what you'd get them on the internet. So, you know, buying local actually not only is just great for a community spirit, it's a great financial decision for the buyers. So we felt really confident that, you know, with putting a lot more energy and effort into it, we could turn it around and, you know, make it a growing business again.
Tori, you've made the leap by quitting your day job, and you're going to work full-time at the store, which is up on Seward Street. What are some of the challenges you've contemplated, and what are some of the changes you've contemplated for the business?
Well, we've already started changing the floor a bit. We wanted to open up the space more. We plan on using it as a venue for musical guests and other various, they sort of did before, but not to the extent that we would like to. So we put tables in on the main floor so that we can take them off and accommodate much larger groups than they had before, such as our first Friday event is going to be July 7th, and we have Alexi's band, the Flustered Cluckers, on at 5.
I'm not going to ask you to say that 5 times fast.
I'm impressed I said it the first time.
Thank you. Family radio.
Yeah. And Rob Cohen will be playing at 6. So this is going to be our first test to see if we can use it as a venue accurately.
So it seems like a very small place. You mentioned the first floor. Is there another floor?
Yeah, well, I meant the floors in the front of the, as opposed to the maze of books in the back, which we're probably going to have to utilize in future band projects.
There is actually a small upstairs, but the ceilings are about 6 feet or so. So personally, I have to hunch weirdly to fit in there. So.
I'm just fine, so I don't understand.
It could be the children's section.
Right. They'd have to climb a kind of a ladder, though. We'll see.
So other changes you've contemplated, making it a venue to share musical events, other changes that might be more specific to how books are processed, how they're offered, what are you looking at internally at the business?
Well, that's the part that I'm still learning is how to value and process used books, because I haven't actually had experience doing that, but we are very lucky to have Greg Ordner, our full-time employee, to stay on with us full-time. And he has been doing this the last year or so, year and a half, I think. And so he's got experience with it, so we're going to work through it together. And the old owners, Tony and Don, are staying in town. I'm sure they'll be traveling much more. But, you know, we have resources to learn how to do this. So I won't be changing that, at least until I'm comfortable with the way that they did it before.
And one thing, the Observatory books, which was a fixture here since, you know, for nearly an entire time I've been alive, recently closed. And, you know, that was a place where people went for rare books. And without that, it may be that we can move into that more and start offering rare books. And I think previously people in Juneau, when they had a rare book and they wanted to sell, they'd take it to Dee because they, you know, she has an international reputation for that. So we're hoping that we can provide that somewhat and move into the rare book space as well and perhaps sell them online, which to expand the market a bit beyond what you can get in Juneau.
We're talking to Alexi Painter and Tori Weaver about their recent purchase of Rainy Retreat Books. As you did your research, Tori, you mentioned the rise of the walk-in bookstore and the book you can hold in your hand. What resources do you look to do that kind of research into that business sector? How do you learn that data?
News articles. It's kind of all online. It's been pretty big news in the book community for the last year, and that's something that independent bookstores have their thumb on the pulse of, is how e-readers are doing. So
certainly in their interest. And are there catalogs, for example, on how to price books based on the title and the age?
Sort of. Also online, there is one particular source that most used bookstores use, so we can kind of see what other people are selling the books for online and what they've sold for in the past. So that's incredibly helpful for how we value books.
Alexi, you mentioned the possibility of selling online rare books due to the gap created by the closure of mm-hmm. the Observatory. Is there any thought to selling all kinds of books online, or is that a complicated process?
We may look into that, but frankly, the profit margin of that is always going to be very low. So by the time we have to ship out of Alaska for a $4 paperback, you're not really going to make much money there. So I think our focus would really be on those one-of-a-kind items that we may have one of very few copies around. And especially with the Alaska books, Dee, Long and Bought, Observatory, and Rainy Retreat both combined have a lot of Alaska books. We ended up buying a lot of Observatory's Alaska books as well. So that's something that there's not a lot of elsewhere, and we'd like to potentially offer those because it's a unique thing that we can do.
I'm wondering how much walk-in traffic you get from tourists. Local people certainly are aware of the store. How many folks cruising up Seward Street stop in and buy a book?
Quite a few. Actually, we do about half of the business historically between June and August. So those 3 months are pretty big for the store. We'd like to increase the local presence, but just having all those people walk by and people wanting a book to read on their vacation or a souvenir to take home has been historically a very big thing for the store.
Yeah, there has been a nice display of Alaska-oriented books in the window, I think, on a regular basis. Any other special events planned? You mentioned the first Friday, which is July 7th, will feature your band, Alexi. The Flustered Cluckers will be there. Other events we should be aware of?
Later in July, another of my bands is playing. This is Gamble and the High Cost of Living. It is a 10-piece soul band that we're going to try to fit in a tiny bookstore.
It's going to be chaos.
It'll be an adventure. So that's on July 29th. And then we have on August 4th, which is another First Friday, we'll have Annie B., who's you listeners may know from her show on KXLL.
Great. So three musical events coming up at Rainy Retreat Books. It has been purchased by Alexi Painter and Tori Weaver. We wish you a good luck in the book world, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 20th of June, 2017. It's the birthday of Josephine Winslow Johnson, born in Kirkwood, Missouri, 1910. When she was 22, she left college, help out on the family farm. She also set up a little table in the attic, and she began writing short stories. And then she wrote a novel called Now in November, about an isolated farm family driven into poverty by the Depression. She was at home at the farm one day in 1935 when a reporter called to tell her that she had won the Pulitzer Prize. She was 24 years old. She went on to write 10 books of poetry, fiction, essays, including Circle of Seasons. She was a passionate environmentalist. And she wrote a memoir in 1969, The Inland Island, a month-by-month record of the ecological changes on her 37-acre farm in Ohio. It's the birthday of the playwright Lillian Hellman, born in New Orleans, 1905, author of many successful plays, including The Little Foxes and The Children's Hour. And it's the birthday of Jacques Offenbach, born in Cologne, Germany, 1819, who wrote the opera Orpheus in the Underworld, in which the gods and goddesses perform a can-can. He also wrote the tune that was taken for the American Marine Corps hymn From the Halls of Montezuma. Here's a poem for today by Barbara Crooker, Patty's Charcoal Drive-In. First job in tight black shorts and a white bowling shirt, red lipstick and bouncing ponytail. I present each overflowing tray as if it were a banquet. I'm 16 and college bound. This job's temporary as the summer sun, but right now it's the boundaries of my life. After the first few nights of mixed orders and missing cars, the work goes easily. I take out the silver trays and hook them to the windows, inhale the mingled smells of seared meat, patties, salty ketchup, rich sweet malteds. The lure of grease drifts through the thick night air. And it's always summer at Patty's Charcoal Drive-In. Carloads of blonde and tan girls pull up next to red convertibles, boys in black t-shirts and slick hair. Everyone knows what they want, and I wait on them, hoping for tips, loose pieces of silver flung carelessly as the stars. Doo-wop music streams from the jukebox, and each night repeats itself, faithful as a steady date. Towards 10 p.m., traffic dwindles. We police the lot, pick up wrappers. The dark pours down, sticky as coke, but the light from the kitchen gleams like a beacon. A breeze comes up, chasing papers in the far corners of the darkened lot, as if suddenly a cold wind had started to blow straight at me from the future. I read that in a Doris Lessing book, but right now, purse fat with tips, the moon sitting like a cheeseburger on a flat black grill. This is enough. Your order, please. Patty's Charcoal Drive-In, a poem by Barbara Crooker from her Selected Poems, published by Future Cycle Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Staples. Staples offers copy and print solutions for businesses, from color copies to presentations to promotional products. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. And by Magoosh, online test prep for the ACT, SAT, GMAT, GRE, LSAT, and MCAT. Prep smart, go far, and enjoy the ride at magoosh.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I am Raymond Sensmeyer from Yakutat, Alaska. Gininak, Yuchat Duasal, Yeh, Nachatsati, Kwashkaquan, Nayachat, Tekwadi, Dichkan. I was a smoker for 55 years. My grandson would ask me to quit because he said he was tired of worrying about me. Now I have more time to spend with my family. It is never, never too late to quit.
Call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
We're glad to have you back with us on a Juneau afternoon. I'm volunteer Lori Scandlin with Jeff Brown at the board today. My next guest is Bill Merck. He's been on the board of Wishkaandei, which is a spoken word organization, for 6 of its 7 years. Glad to have you with us, Bill. And we're talking about this weekend showcase. It is the 4th annual summer showcase of poetry and music being sponsored by Wishkaandei. Talk a little bit about what folks can expect at the performance, which is at the Rockwell Ballroom this Saturday evening
at
7, beginning at 7.
Correct. Thanks, first of all, for being such a supporter of the work that we do in the community. K2 radio stations are just phenomenal, and we really appreciate every opportunity we get to be on the air. Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. Yes, we have our 4th annual summer showcase this Saturday night at the Rockwell, 7 o'clock. We have 5 very strong voices from the community that we have handpicked to perform and with music accompaniment from Jacob Picard, who's a very good local musician. He's actually the Wishkaandei House Band. When we have our open mic events.
Or the House Humans.
He can do it all. He's a magician. He's amazing. So he's going to be there to help our 5 poets with their performances.
And the performances are Erica Berggren, Austin Nawaya Tagaban, Kate Ross, Lily Hope, Christy Name Erickson, with the music by Jake. And then you've got a couple MCs, too. I see DJ Dorego and Guy Unzicker will help guide the program.
Correct. They'll be the hosts. They may throw a little bit of their own poetry in there. I'm not quite sure what they have planned, but I know it'll be phenomenal.
Of the 5 folks who are going to be performing, I know they're amongst the dozens who have participated in the free monthly spoken word activities that Wishkaandei offers throughout the year. How were these 5 individuals chosen?
We have seen each of them perform in their own way, and we were looking for some diversity as well as very strong voices. And those were primarily the 2 requirements that we put together as a group, the Wishkaandei board, at one of our board meetings a month or so ago. We came up with all these names of performers. Everybody, you know, there were no wrong choices. So we had a list of 15 or 20 people, and then we went through and voted as a board and figured out who would fit best with who, want to put out our best performers as we can find, and these were the 5 that made the cut this year. So
Wishkaandei is in its 7th year. Talk about its genesis and why it started and what its name means. It clearly is a Tlingit name.
It is a Tlingit name. During the first year that Wishkaandei was, when it was forming, it was initially called the Juneau Poetry Slam. It was started by Christy Name Erickson, who's currently the president, and a gentleman named Nahan, who is a local poet, who's moved down south, I believe, lives in the Seattle area now. They were looking for another name, something that was more fitting for the community. We took suggestions for the name. Ishmael Hope actually came up with the name of Wishkaandei, which means parallel paths or parallel trails in Tlingit. So that's how it started, and then it's just morphed on from there. Typically, in the beginning, we would have at every event, we would have an open mic, and we would take a break. Then we would have a competitive portion. We changed that up this year so that 1 month we do an open mic, 1 month we do a competitive event, and then the next month we do a writing workshop.
When are the regular free events? Are they on a schedule that you can anticipate?
Yeah, we have a bookmark calendar that's available, and people can look online and find out when that is. It changes a little bit because we do have the summer showcase in June, And in October, we have our Grand Slam event, where we take all these Slam winners and runner-ups, put them together, and let them perform. And that'll be in October.
And what is the website where folks can find more information about WOOSH?
If you just Google WOOSH, W-O-O-S-H, we come right to the top of the list. You can also send us an email at junopoetryslam@gmail.com.
We're talking with Bill Merck. He is a longtime board member of WOOSH Kanyad Dei, and they are hosting their summer showcase this Saturday evening at the Rockwell Ballroom for $25 per person. It begins at 7, and I understand adult beverages will be available.
There is a bar upstairs. There should be someone working that. We'll have it all decorated. David Lindrum and the folks at Landscape Alaska helped us last year bring in a bunch of plants and really deck the place out. We'll be doing that again this year. There'll be lighting and plants, and we're making it a real magical space.
Bill, talk about your interest in poetry and where that root began to germinate for you.
For me, on a personal level, it began in high school, not through English courses so much as more folk music. Probably listened to too much Bob Dylan when I was growing up in high school. Tom Waits, a lot of songwriters. Those were my primary influences, I guess. It grew from there.
And why should anybody care about poetry?
Why shouldn't they? It depends who you talk to. For me, it's a way of looking at life. It's a way of walking through your everyday. You're noticing the beauty. You're noticing the sounds, the scents, the people, the elements. I think it's a way of just being aware, and that's all that poetry really is just being aware of your surroundings and acknowledging that.
With the 5 slots for performers, what is expected of the performer?
Each performer will be sharing their own work. They'll have a 15 to 20-minute set. It will all be done from memory. It's all memorized work. Jacob will be there to help with the performance. Jacob's performance is going to be great on his own, but when you put the poetry with the music, something magical really happens.
The tickets are $25, and I noticed that they are available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, Kindred Post, or at the door, but you can also get them online at bit.ly, that's bit.ly/WOOSH. Tickets, and WOOSH is just the way it sounds.
It is. You also get them from WOOSH board members. We have them for sale as well.
Oh, so. Very good. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Bill. Again, the WOOSH Kanyad Dei Summer Showcase is Saturday evening at the Rockwell Ballroom. It's $25. You can get tickets at the usual outlets at the door from board members or online at bit.ly/WOOSHTix, and the show begins at 7. Glad to have you, Bill.
Thank you so much.
This is Bird Note. Because many woodpeckers have pointed tongues, it was once assumed that certain ones harpoon their prey. But what they actually do is more complex. Like a safe cracker in a movie, birds like the hairy woodpecker use a killer combination of sensitivity and force. First, as it scales a tree trunk, the hairy woodpecker taps lightly here and there. A telltale sign, just the right resonance, lets it know there's a tunnel underneath. And where there's a tunnel, there's most likely a tunneler, a wood-boring insect. Next, the woodpecker chisels a small opening and slides its long tongue down the insect's tunnel. The tongue tip likely features taste and touch organs that sense when it hits the bullseye. But how do you get the prey out? Whether beetle, ant, or grub, it's by now most likely braced itself inside the tree. The woodpecker's tongue is more than up to the job. Its tip is coated with sticky saliva, has backward-facing barbs, and can even wrap itself around the prey. So, once it's found its mark, there's no resisting its force, and the prey is done for. Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for early summer planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center, information at 789-6780.
If you're just joining us, Welcome to Juno Afternoon. My next guests are Heather Mitchell and Tom Locher. Tom, is it Locher or Locher?
Yeah, Locher.
Thank you. And we are talking about an event at the Rockwell Ballroom on Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. We, as usual in Juno, we have a busy, fun weekend coming up. So this is the Cabaret. Talk about what that is, and I know it's gone on for many years.
8 years now. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us on the air.
You bet. Glad to have you here. So what is the Cabaret, and what is its purpose, Tom?
Well, we got our start in 2009. Laura Haywood had this great idea to bring some local singers and accompanists together and perform pieces from the Great American Songbook. Each singer does two songs, and then it's someone else's turn. This coming Sunday, we have 11, possibly 12 singers lined up to sing. And Heather's done it many times. I've been an accompanist at every single show, and Luke Weld will be one of the accompanists this time, and he's also great. So, Heather, tell him about how
Heather,
you're
singing. Are you one of the performers?
I am. I am one of the singers. I also are kind of on the Juno Cabaret team with Tom and Tom Melville doing promotions and publicity and just like anything, just dealing with the organizational aspects of putting on our cabarets. And so we're doing these about every other month of the year. And what we do is we put out an open call for our singers. This is not audition only or handpicked by us. These are opportunities for our local community members as well as some friends visiting Juno, people who have either lived here before and have come back or are in town from Southeast. We've got lots of people that sing on the show, sing at our shows. And so we go ahead and give everyone an opportunity to kind of get in there and fill up our list. So this time our list is we've got Terry Lynn LeCompte is back in town doing some work, and so she's going to be singing with us. She's sung with us many times, including at the first cabaret.
Very first one. Mm-hmm. She's all the way from New York City.
She's all the way from New York City. Yes. That's right. And our Dean Womack, who has sung with us many times. I'll be singing. My son, who is one of our teens, you can sing with our cabaret if you're 15 and up. My son is 15, so he will be singing with us. We've got Terry Gallant. First time. She's one of our newcomers, Terry. We love to have newcomers. We've also got Linda Stover. We also have Courtney Nelson, who is not a new singer, but she's new to cabaret, and so she's been doing stuff both with, I think, the Maritime Festival and Folk Fest. And so she's in my Rotary Club, and I kept, elbowing her and telling her she needs to sing. So I signed her up and told her she had to sing this time. So she's going to be singing with us. We're also going to have Brittany McKibben, who is this past year's Juno Lyric Opera's Hoosier Diva Diva. So she's sung with us before, and she'll be singing with us. We'll have Tom Melville and Myra Kalbaugh, both of whom have sung with us many times.
Now, is this a competitive event? Is
not
it?
At all.
Not
mm-hmm.
at all. So
no.
It's strictly for entertainment.
Right. Our motto or mission is Great American Songbook, preservation through performance. And each singer picks one piece from Great American Songbook, and the other can be almost anything. But usually stage song, screen song, a pop song, something that's familiar to the audience.
Identifiable and American.
Yeah, absolutely.
Heather, what have you chosen your selections?
I have.
Can you say what they are? I'd like to hear a couple examples of what we might consider great American songs.
Sure. Well, one of the ones that I'll be singing is Summertime, which is a classic, a Porgy and Bess, a Gershwin classic, with a little bit of a different treatment. And then I will also be doing a song that I've loved for a really long time instrumentally and just really kind of started talking to Tom about it a few months ago, and that's Body and Soul. And that's one I really enjoy as well. Usually I don't do two songbook songs every show. I usually do one songbook, and then I find something else sort of strange, and we give it the cabaret treatment. But this time it's both songbook songs.
What do you mean by cabaret treatment? Describe that style.
We restyle the song for piano and voice so the singer can get up there and make an intimate connection with the audience. And it's a more of a listening environment. Food and drink will be available. People can certainly have some table talk, but it's about listening to the singers and connecting with them. And when we say a cabaret treatment, we take an old standard. For example, Heather mentioned Summertime from Porgy and Bess, which is more of a warhorse than a standard. It's done a lot. But
it was the summer, so we decided we'd do something thematic.
Oh, it's summer? I hadn't noticed that.
She breathed some new life into this old standard and given it sort of a bossa nova, bossa swing overhaul. And it sounds really good. And then Tom Melville, I know he picked an old standard called The Nearness of You, a Hoagie Carmichael song, and
really
sort
like
of restyled
one.
It for a jazz waltz. Terry Lynn, I know she's brought a If I Were a Bell from Guys and Dolls, a great American songbook standard. And Courtney is going to do Fever. So
a sultry invitation.
Yeah. So does that give you an idea?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tom, when we talk about accompaniment, you're a pianist. Is there accompaniment other than a single instrument in what you call the cabaret style?
David Shakely Early is always our drummer at these shows, and he is excellent. He's great, plays great brushes. He's very sensitive. Mm-hmm. He knows a lot of songs, and he loves working with singers like me. So he is there to play drums, and then we also, both Luke and I, play keyboard bass. So we play piano with the right hand, bass with the left. So it sounds like there's a trio behind a singer often. Yeah.
Interesting. We're talking with Tom Locher and Heather Mitchell about this Sunday evening's 8th annual cabaret program at the Rockwell Ballroom beginning at 7 o'clock. How much are the tickets?
It's pay as you can. Mm-hmm. Just walk in and there's no ticket to buy. There will also be an under 21 area for people who come to watch a show and are not accompanied by a parent or guardian.
You did mention the encouragement of teens who are 15 and older. Are you building that group then?
Yes.
Yeah, we are. I mean, and when we talk about our mission being preservation through performance, part of that is also making sure that these types of songs are being exposed to younger audiences, not just to come hear them, but to come sing them. You know, my son does a lot of theater work, and he's got a friend who has also sung as a 15-year-old. It's nice when they do, because then they bring their friends to listen to them. And then they're also often surprised by some current popular songs that have themes pulled from songbook songs. I mean, there's a Train song that basically has heart and soul built into its main melody, and so
that's in the top 10 this week.
Yes, and so you know, but what it's nice to go, oh, that song, I know that song. I didn't know that is actually a 50 or 60-year-old song that was really popular in a different way. And these songs are really beautiful for showcasing a voice, and we have some very talented young singers in this town. And there is more than just what you might see in a Broadway show range. These songs can be restyled, they can be transposed in key, and like you said, you can give them a different treatment to really showcase the singer's voice, as well as let them, you know, get used to singing in front of an audience and creating that connection through performance.
Building their own arrangement and making it their own. You know, that's what we encourage too, is at the end of the rehearsing, this will be your version of this song, your interpretation. Yes.
How much rehearsal time do the singers get with you, Tom, to help style a show?
Typically two or three times.
Two or three times.
We meet once to discuss songs and keys, and if they're prepared, we can build the arrangements right there. Otherwise, they come back and build the arrangements and then start running through the song until they feel confident enough to perform it in front of a little audience, like a Juno Cabaret. Our audiences run about 100 people, very supportive, very understanding, and very, very interested in the singers. So,
you mentioned monthly workshops or performances as well. Talk a little bit about those.
We've been doing the Juno Cabaret open call show about every other month.
Every other month.
Yeah,
I
know our next one is September 17th because summertime, everyone is so busy.
Yeah.
We also have an ongoing lecture concert series at the new museum, the APK in the lecture hall.
Mm-hmm.
And those have been one Saturday a month. Showcasing the work of a great American songbook composer in 2017. Mm-hmm. The January show was Richard Rodgers, February was Duke Ellington, March was women composers, and April was Cole Porter.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to resume that in the fall, and we have about a dozen or more of those set to be performed in the lecture hall at the new museum starting in the fall. So.
Well, you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
Is there a website that folks can look at to see that list of both events as well as the lectures?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. www.junocabaret.net, and that's where you can also sign up to sing. Anyone 15 or older who lines up an accompanist can sign up to sing. We'll be opening sign-ups for the next show right after this show mm-hmm. is over, the night of this show. We usually open the sign-ups the same night as the show mm-hmm. and then hope to get everyone on there and before we give the show September 17th. But this one is Sunday, June 25th, 7 p.m., Rockwell Ballroom. That's upstairs.
And it's pay as you wish.
Yeah, pay as you can. That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us on, Lori.
Thanks so much.
Hello, this is Stephen Pfister, Facility Manager at Centennial Hall, part of the CBJ Parks and Recreation. Centennial Hall, Juneau's Convention Center, located in the heart of downtown's Willoughby District, is an important economic generator in our community, hosting a variety of events with over 80,000 people attending each year. Events include the Alaska Folk Festival, Celebration, and a variety of conventions, conferences, and fundraisers. For more information, call 586-5283 or visit our website at centennialhall.net.
Join us on Tuesday night for a screening of the documentary Lineage, Tlingit Art Across Generations, a 360 North and K2 Public Media film made possible by a grant from the Alaska Humanities Forum. After the screening, co-director Ishmael Hope will be joined by artists from the documentary for a multimedia presentation and discussion about Tlingit art. Admission is free on Tuesday, June 20th at 6 p.m. at 360 in the K2 building.
This is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is Juneau Glacier Valley Rotary. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17YOK@JuneauPolice.com. Together, we can make Juneau a better place to live.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. Today's volunteer, my next guest is Maggie Swanson, and she is here to talk about the Douglas 4th of July activities. There would not be a 4th of July without having Douglas. There just wouldn't. It goes back to, I don't know,
this
I think
the
almost
119th year of celebrating.
The kind of the founding of folks living in this area in a way that formed the town named Juneau and Douglas. I'm always amazed by the level of both cooperation and competitiveness between the communities on our most popular holiday here. Well, welcome. You are completely decked out. I am typically so in love with radio, but at the moment, I think the blaze of red, white, and blue, both that you have on your head and around you, is something that really befits Technicolor television for sure.
Have to get in the spirit.
Well, I think you brought the spirit in here. Thank you, Maggie. So what's up with the Douglas part of this celebration, which really, think of it, is right around the corner?
Yes, it is. It starts next week, and that's kind of amazing. It's come up pretty quick. So as I was saying, it is the 119th celebration of the Douglas 4th of July events over here. We want to encourage everybody to come across the bridge and visit us. We have activities starting on the 1st. I'd like to give a little bit of history about the 4th of July in Douglas.
Absolutely.
If I can. So when the miners were running the mine and when they were working all year long, they had 2 days off a year. They had the 4th of July and Christmas. And so the Douglas 4th of July committee kind of takes on those two holidays. Now the fireworks start at midnight on the 3rd or right on the 4th so that the miners have that day off and then they have to go back to work on the 5th. So that was where all that started from. And the focus for the 4th of July committee in Douglas is on children and community, as I'm sure you're aware. So on the 1st of July, we have started a sidewalk chalk challenge with the Douglas Public Library. And so on nice days, we have the chalk challenge in front of the library. There's little squares there on the sidewalk, and everybody from little kids to grandparents come and join us and draw whatever pictures you feel like drawing. There'll be a little bit of a music jam at the same time. If it's raining, you know, we cover all bases and we go down into the parking garage and draw on the wall and have a great old time.
Great idea.
So then on the 2nd of July, we are holding our drawing for our raffle. The 4th of July committee raises funds every year to support the activities for the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th. We receive a grant of $3,500 from the city, and so we thank CBJ for that. However, it's not enough to fund everything that we do, so we are raising money ourselves. A portion of that goes to the prize winners, obviously, and then the rest of it goes to support the 4th of July activities, the community picnic, the watermelon eating contest. We also do the ghost walk for the children on Halloween, skate with Santa for the Christmas tree lighting, back to school skates. And then we as an organization decide where we want the additional funds to go. We've gone to the Treadwell Arena was the start of the raffle. Then the pavilion, we've donated to the pump house, the roof of the pump house. And now we've been purchasing skates for the little kids at Treadwell Arena and helped with the costs for that. We've planted trees for Arbor Day along the road on Gastineau, on St. Anne's down there.
So really strengthening the community of Douglas. Absolutely. And what it has to offer to the broader community here. And, of course, on the 4th of July.
I'm sorry, we have the 3rd of July. First, we have a community picnic. So everyone all over town, come on over to Douglas for the community picnic.
At Sandy Beach, I assume?
Yes, at starting at 6 o'clock. And we have a watermelon eating contest for the children starting at 6 as well. And the watermelons are donated by Foodland IGA. We also have a sand dollar search where we pepper the beach with sand dollars. So please, adults, if you see sand dollars on the beach on the 3rd, please don't pick them up. They're there for the kids, okay? And then we have the soapbox derby pre-trials start at 6 as well. You can't forget the soapbox races.
Let's hope they never disappear.
I know.
And then, of course, midnight, we've got the fireworks.
Absolutely. And Douglas is a great place to stay and watch them, right?
Sure is. You look up and down the channel from there.
Yes. Okay, so on the 4th, our parade starts at 2 o'clock. And please, we'd like to encourage everybody from the Juno Parade to come on over to the Douglas Parade. We all line up at Gastineau School and head on down to the Montessori School. And that's the extent of the parade. And then everybody just goes down to the beach for the events. There is a first student provides bus service from the Federal Building to Gastineau School every half hour from 11 to 5, which helps a lot of
free
people.
Free shuttle. Folks should remember that. Free shuttle from the Federal Building to Gastineau School and back every half hour beginning at
11 a.m.?
11.
Yes.
Excellent. To help reduce that traffic flow.
Absolutely. Our Grand Marshal this year is the Treadwell Historic Society, and that's in commemoration with all of the events that they're planning and have been working on for the 100th year of the cave-in of the mine. And so as the society, they're going to be represented by Wayne Jensen, Paulette Simpson, and Linda Snow. So wave and tell them all thank you. We appreciate everything that they've done. We have the community, Douglas Community Methodist Church has their annual fundraiser, their beef barbecue. So if you're walking down toward the beach, help yourself get food there. Firefighters are selling hot dogs. And as you walk on down to the beach, there's the food court. And so far, we don't have too many. So we'd like to encourage people to sign up to be food vendors. Right now, we have Fat Mo's, the Doghouse, Helping Hands, the Filipino Community, the Northern Tea House, Peterson's Pretzels, Urban Eskimo, and this young man that sells mac and cheese.
Mm. Where can people let you know of their interest if they would like to help or be part of this food court that you've just mentioned? What's the best contact, Maggie?
Thank you. The best contact for the food court would be to call Parks and Recreation. Their phone number is 586-5226. The vending application can be found at juno.org/parkrec/vending.php. They need to work with Parks and Rec to get a vending permit in order to participate on the 4th.
Right.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Maggie Swanson. She is with the Douglas 4th of July Committee. This is the 119th 4th of July celebration in that wonderful community over there. There will be a community picnic at 6 p.m. on the 3rd at Sandy Beach, with all kinds of other activities beginning on the 1st and running on the 2nd and through the day on the 3rd, with, of course, on the 4th, the 2 p.m. parade, which will begin at Gastineau School. You can get there via a free shuttle, which will run from the Federal Building every half hour beginning at 11 a.m. And always there are such a great variety of fun activities over there at Sandy Beach.
So we have the annual Sandcastle Contest, too, starting at noon. This year, the high tide is at 11:18, and it's only 14 feet. Last year, we had quite a problem because it was high tide at noon, and it was like 16 feet.
Oh,
so
no.
You only had a couple feet to build your sandcastles. Folks, you have a lot more room this year. Don't forget all the field events for the children. Major change this year. Instead of having them right behind the pavilion in the area where Gold Rush is, we're moving them over to Field 3 where the dog frisbee contest used to be, so there's a lot more room, and it's safer without all of the obstacles from the Gold Rush.
Very good. Do people, should people register in advance, Maggie, or is that not necessary?
Absolutely not. In Douglas, you just come right on over for the children's parade, show up at the north end of Gastineau School, and come and join us. For the kids' events, just walk on down to the beach after the parade, and they will start calling them. Now, these races are for children the age of 2 all the way up to 100. So come and join us.
Thanks, Maggie. And one last question.
Yes.
Will it be sunny?
We have put in our request, but that's about the best we can do. So everybody else, put in your request, and we'll see what happens.
The power of cooperation.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your time, Maggie, and thanks for your work on the committee.
Thank you very much for having us.
Studio with me now are sisters Alicia and Kirsa Scandies, and they're here to talk about this weekend's Club Baby Seal comedy show. Wow, this weekend is jam-packed with so much good stuff in our town. The shows will be at Gold Town Nickelodeon at 9 and 10:30 p.m. Ladies, is this a new deal? What is this? Club Baby Seal? Come on.
I know.
We're
getting our sea legs now.
Yeah. We're
oh,
actually...
Not your seal legs?
Yeah. Oh,
I'm having fun.
We've actually been going now for almost a year, but not fully in the Nickelodeon.
Yeah, it started with house shows.
And is it the two of you? Is it a whole
cadre
of
yes.
comedians?
Okay,
yeah.
Talk about how it formed and what we're talking about
yeah.
here.
Yeah, so the actual club consists of 5 comedians, and 3 of those will be featured this particular show. One of our seals is off planting the flag in the
migrated
lower 48.
To Arizona.
And one of our seals is out of town. But Nate Williamson, Allison Holtkamp, and myself are all founding members who will be at the show. And we're really excited because this weekend we get to feature newcomer.
I'm a newbie. This is my first time on the stage with them. So
yeah.
A little nerve-wracking.
And we have a guest MC, Miguel Rohrbacher, as well.
And how did this get started? Had you dabbled in comedy, you know, in front of the mirror at home and said, this is good enough to go on the road? Or
We're
all avid comedy fans, and particularly Alicia and one of the other founding members, Brady, who's since left town. They were really, you know, it was something that they both had talked about and kind of a shared dream of theirs. And then when they met Nate... He kind of was instantly on the same page.
Catalyst.
Like, so it was like meeting him was just a springboard. Like, all right, well, now we have a third person. We're all like totally on the same page. Like, you know, let's just give it a shot. And they started doing
Allison
these writing sessions.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It like kind of grew organically out of them working together and kind of just workshopping and trying to put together like what would a set look like, you know, how can we do this? And from there, the house show started, where it was kind of like, well, let's convert this living room. Let's have, like, a friendly audience, you know, kind of test it out. And it's just grown from there.
Kirsa, tell me some of your favorite comedians. You said we're interested in comedy. We watch it all the time. Give me an example of a few of your favorites.
Well, I adore John Mulaney, and he's a younger comic. I feel like Louis C.K. is kind of one of those, like, cultural touchstones right now. So he's kind of pushed the boundaries of what you can do with comedy and different ways that you can approach it and make it relatable, so it's not just, you know, the snare drum, you know,
but
you know, and so, but I feel like John Mulaney is somebody who works kind of more in that classical format, and anything that kind of has that left turn, anything that's going to kind of blindside you and take you in a different direction than you thought.
And Alicia, how about you? Some inspirational performers.
Yeah, I would agree with those. Ali Wong, Nate Bargatze, Ricky Gervais. I kind of feel like comedy is having a moment. I mean, you know, more than a moment, but just culturally, I feel like more people than ever are into stand-up comedy, because I feel like if you ask somebody to name some favorite comedians, there are more and more that are household names, which is kind of neat, because there's sort of that crossover with other kinds of performance.
And it seems like late night television now features folks who put a lot of effort and energy into the comedy part of that show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not that Johnny Carson wasn't humorous,
right.
But moreover, it seems the shows today have a greater emphasis on comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in a way, because those shows were always, I guess those were kind of always a place that a stand-up could go to perform a set or to get some kind of exposure, but I feel like right now the current late night crop, really, if you look at their backgrounds, they've all gotten to where they are by starting out in comedy writing. And so I feel like you have this like bumper crop of comedy nerds who have like made it somewhere, like they've gotten a stage and they're totally like trying to push that and share that, and the comedians have taken over.
We're talking with Alicia and Kirsa Scandes. They are sisters who are working as stand-up comedians, and they have two shows on this Saturday night at 9 and 10:30 at Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. What is the cost to get in, and is it R-rated?
Well, it is certainly R-rated. It's also a 21 and up event, so there will be alcohol available.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we don't have an all-ages event on the menu quite yet, but that's something that we've been working on. Tickets are
$10.
At the door, or?
You can get them online at theclubbabyseal.com. Pardon me?
Clubbabyseal.com.
The clubbabyseal.com.
The one and only. We just have about a half a minute, but I'm interested, what is the greatest challenge in comedy? Each of you give a kind of a quick, hilarious answer.
Making them laugh.
Not going too far, making sure you're punching in the right direction.
Make sure you're punching in the right direction. Ooh, good byword to keep in mind. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
With the program.
Yeah,
is this the first time you've done a showcase?
No.
Not for them. My first time.
Yes.
So.
Well,
first time they're injecting new blood.
Two first-timers are very excited. So come on.
Well,
down.
Break a leg and club a seal.
Thank you.
As it were. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Shelley Delaney will host. We'll learn about this weekend's Amateur Radio Field Day. Lena Simmons will be here to highlight the Midsummer Vocal Workshop. We'll find out about the United Human Services Wednesday night reception at the Hangar Ballroom with guest Chuck Collins. That and our usual programming, that's tomorrow at 3. Looking at the weather, scattered showers today. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Friday, mostly sunny. And Saturday, partly sunny. Thanks for joining us today.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also